Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and my next guest, Mary Roach, is the kind of science writer who goes where others fear to tread. No, not outer space. That was her last book, and you might remember her Radiolab piece where she got to put her arm into a live cow's stomach. In her new book, Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal, she follows the path of human digestion from one end all the way to the other, with plenty of side trips and footnotes along the way. Welcome back to the station, Mary Roach.
Thank you so much.
And being aware of the disgust and prevailing idea amongst many people that when it comes to their bodily functions of these sorts, ignorance is bliss, and the less they know, the better. What made you think people would be interested in Gulp subject matter?
Well, I am sort of forcing people to stick their heads all the way down or up themselves, and I realize that. But I do feel that they will, if they're willing to take the plunge, that they'll some of the disgust and revulsion will give way to a little bit of respect, maybe even a little awe. I hope I'm not just going to be responsible for turning the stomachs of millions of people across our nation.
But maybe for making us understand our stomachs a little better. In your interview on Fresh Air with Terry Gross earlier in the week, you said that despite its importance, saliva, to start at the top, gets no respect whatsoever. Why should we respect saliva anyway?
Oh, how do I count the ways? I've become a little bit of a saliva weirdo fanatic. But people tend to think, okay, it's just this stuff that moistens what you've chewed up so that you can swallow it more easily. And yeah, it does do that. But this was demonstrated to me in a lab in the Netherlands. The main thing it's doing for you is it's keeping your teeth from dissolving in your mouth. Like if you eat anything with a very low pH, acid pH, like wine, cola, orange juice, that's at a pH, it's so acidic it can dissolve your tooth enamel. So if you take a swallow and you're paying attention, you will feel this gush of liquid coming into your mouth. That's your saliva coming in like the cavalry to protect, to buffer the acid and to make it a safe environment again for your teeth. So it's doing that. It has antibacterial properties, antiviral properties. Also,
because that's not enough.
That's not enough. Get this. Okay. The enzymes, you know, when you hear new Biz laundry detergent with stain-fighting enzymes, those are digestive enzymes. And saliva has a couple of those, predominantly amylase.
So why do we hear that human bites are the worst, you know, like worse than the dog bite when it comes to germs?
Yeah, everyone has heard that.
Kid bites a kid.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, take him to the emergency room, put him on an antibiotic, drip right away. There's a study where they looked at the infection rates of human bites, that is to say, when a human bites another. And sometimes that's just because the fist hit the teeth, so it's not really a bite. It's like a passive bite, mm-hmm. A fight bite. It's called a fight bite. Your fist goes into somebody's teeth and you get an infection from that. But anyway, the infection rates were something like 1 in 52 cases. It's not as high as you think, partly because of the antibacterial properties
of the saliva.
And
in the book, you talk about the really intricate oral processing habits. Listeners, you like how we're doing a lot on the mouth before we get to other things. But these really intricate oral processing habits that our mouth goes through while we chew, all working toward the goal of bolus formation. Oh, boy, bolus. Tell us about bolus and take us through the complex mechanics of chewing.
Sure. Well, bolus formation. What you're doing when you eat, you've got this piece of food and you need – first you take it apart. You chew it, but then you need to reassemble it. Because you can't – you chew something in your mouth and it's in these pieces all over. You can't swallow that. So you do something called bolus formation. And you never – I'm guaranteeing you never really think about this. I tried to think about it. Even though I'm doing the book, it was hard for me to concentrate on my own bolus formation. Mm. You're doing things like intraoral bolus rolling. Your tongue, your cheeks, the inside of your cheeks, your teeth, they're all participating. And everyone does it a little differently. Everyone has their own sort of distinctive way of processing things orally and of chewing. People have very, very distinctive chewing. It's almost like a fingerprint. Some people chew, you know, side to side. Some people chew up and down. Some people are long chewers, short chewers. You've got same mouthful of peanuts. Someone did a study where the people come into the lab, gave them the same mouthful of peanuts. These are all people with healthy teeth. And it ranged from 17 to 110, the number of chews that the people felt that they had to do before they were ready to swallow it. So anyway,
chewing is so important to the enjoyment of food that some tube-fed patients have requested to have their voice box removed so they can swallow again.
That's right. If you have a problem with swallowing coordination, because it's pretty complicated what's going on inside your neck when you swallow. It's kind of like a railroad switching yard in there. The voice box, the larynx has to change position so that the food tube is open. It's because the air tube is normally open and it's got to move over. So if you've got a problem with that swallowing coordination and you can't swallow anymore, one of the things that can be done for you is to just remove the voice box. That way you can swallow. And there are people who would rather be mute than to not be able to swallow normally.
Listeners, we have about 8 minutes left in this segment. If you want to call up, if you've been listening to Mary Roach elsewhere or reading her stuff, Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal is the book. If you have one or two really concise questions, we might be able to sneak them in here at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. But continuing with the narrative, bolus formation has now been achieved.
We have a bolus.
So take us on a tour of the digestive system on the way down. We don't have a ton of time, so it'll have to be the highlights. And you may not reach into my small intestine like you reached into that cow. But what are one or two of the most interesting things we would see on our way down?
All right. Well, you're making your way down into the stomach. People tend to think gastric acid. Oh my God! It's just like if you touched it, you would completely dissolve. You know that scene with John Voight when he's inside the snake and it throws him up and he's melting. It looks like a candle melting. I was in a lab. Was a snake digestion expert. Anyway, he had hydrochloric acid in his lab, and I said, I want to feel like what it would feel like to be in a stomach. Would you please drop some of that acid on me? And in fact, it just itched a little bit. It isn't this instantaneous, it's something out of the Wizard of Oz with I'm melting. Mm. It's a much slower process. Actually, what gastric acid is doing is killing bacteria mainly. It's not. It's more of a sanitary device. You can get by without a stomach. You can chew it up, and even if you just go straight to the small intestine, that's where all the action is. That's where all the nutrients are being absorbed. The small intestine kind of looks like terry cloth because, like a towel, it's doing a lot of absorbing, so it needs to have a lot of surface area. So there's these little finger-like projections. It really does look, if you look a pill cam, you know, where they have someone swallow a little camera, really does look like velvet or terry cloth. And it's pink. It's kind of a beautiful kind of Dr. Seuss landscape. So that's the small intestine where all the good stuff gets absorbed and onto the colon. Colon is, I got a colonoscopy, my first, a couple years ago, and I did it without sedation because I wanted to see what it looks like in there. And granted, it's been flushed out, so it's very tidy. But it's this glistening bubblegum pink world that I know it's been cleaned, but
you really love the alimentary canal. I could tell.
Well, it's my friend. It's inside me my whole life. You know, it's working tirelessly on my behalf. I felt like the least I could do is just say, howdy do.
All right. You want to talk to some of the digestively curious out there? Erwin and Wyckoff, you're on WNYC. Hi, Erwin. Erwin.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, pick up your phone.
Okay, I'm here.
Okay, real quick.
If you could talk about the condition called xerostomia, X-E-R-O-S-T-O-M as in Mary, I-A. Xerostomia is where you have the severe inability to produce, and this dry eye, dry mouth.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's really severe, as your author knows, it can cause everything from the loss of your teeth
mm-hmm.
all the way down to loss of bowel function and severe constipation.
In other words, from lack of saliva production. Yes?
Well, this is a condition called the inability to produce it.
Right. So, you know about that?
Without saliva, you're definitely in a world of trouble. And like you mentioned, you don't, without being able to buffer the acids that you take in, your teeth will literally soften and dissolve. I'm not familiar with the further on down the line consequences of it, but it sounds like quite a serious condition.
Betty and Tribeca, you're on WNYC. Hi, Betty.
Good morning. I'm wanting to ask your guest about Crohn's disease, what the cause of it is, and if she can recommend any cures or solutions.
And this is going to be, if we were to be here for 2 hours, I would say 3/4 of the calls you would get would be from people who have these difficult to diagnose digestive problems. They've been to 25 gastroenterologists,
right,
and they can't really get a clear read on what their problem is, Crohn's disease or whatever.
Right, right. Unfortunately,
have you learned anything that can help those people?
My book takes a look at a normal, healthy, functioning alimentary canal, because that to wander into the world of things gone wrong is a 6-volume set.
Right.
I'm
but
so
you
sorry.
Get a sense from the first two callers what people are concerned about when we discuss the digestion. But you do devote a chapter of the book to the wonderful world of fecal transplant therapy, which garnered a front page article in the New York Times a few months ago and was heard about here on Freakonomics recently. The idea being that a fecal transplant from a healthy person to a digestively sick one can help restore a normal balance of bacteria.
Yeah.
Do you have a verdict?
Absolutely. Fecal transplants are being tested in cases of inflammatory bowel disease, irritable bowel. I believe there are studies underway, and it's a surprisingly simple, inexpensive, and effective treatment. In particular, it's been used with chronic C. difficile infection, which is a very serious ailment, and 30,000 people a year die from it. And a fecal transplant is very much what it sounds like. You're taking healthy donor specimen and you're putting it in, reseeding the lower bowel so that you have a healthier mix of bacteria. And it is very swiftly effective. And I think that you're going to be seeing it used more and more for different inflammatory bowel diseases. Hopefully it will work for that as well.
Now, I should say, as we have 2 minutes left, that there are just so many eye-popping facts to be found in this book that there's just no way that we could have crammed them all into this one segment. But before we go, there was, I would say half the fun of the book is in the footnotes. We have an excerpt on our website now, and since we air in New York City, I wondered if you wanted to give a shout-out to Flushing, which you point out in a footnote is the home of the International Academy of Proctology.
Were
they
was,
located
yes.
in Flushing? That's for them to tell us. But you offer to pay good money for one of their 1962 gold charms that overlays the snake and staff medical symbol over an image of a rectum. Maybe you'll get a taker from our audience.
I'm very hopeful because we're local now, and I feel like this person is out there. So far, nobody's contacted me, but it's a beautiful little, and it's like 12 karat gold, a little charm, and I love the rectum. They incorporated that into the traditional medical, snake and staff. Help me, folks.
Listeners, if you're an old veteran of the International Academy of Proctology from its Flushing days, maybe you have one of those 1962 charms, and you can contact us, and we'll make sure we connect you with Mary Roach. Do you get into any of the usual American diet debates through your digestive lens? Because if it wasn't all irritable bowel syndrome, we'd get all calls on low-carb, low-fat, processed food, the Mediterranean diet.
Yeah, I have left diet to 1,000 other books, diet and nutrition. This is more about the human food processor, the delightful machine that we all carry around inside us.
You've done space. You've now done the alimentary canal. What are you doing next?
I don't know.
You're going to finish your book tour first.
Yes, that's right. First things first.
Okay. Mary Roach and her new book, Gulp, Adventures on the Alimentary Canal. You're going to be doing a reading, I see, at Barnes & Noble tonight at 7 o'clock at Union Square, the Union Square Barnes & Noble, tonight at 7. BYO yep. Food.
Ted Allen, the guy from Chopped, the chef, he's going to be there Great. With me. So we'll be, I don't know, hopefully he's bringing something to eat, but I can't promise.
Thank you.